So a warm welcome to each and every one of you. So we begin this evening with a 30-minute guided meditation. I will touch upon the theme, and an aspect of that is beginnings, the arisings, and that leading on to staying and completing. So firstly though, let's just sit for a moment or two with the fullness of the posture. Two feet firmly on the floor, if you're in the chair. Fully with the presence of the posture. So that we are anchored, grounded, appreciating the significance of being well established. In a calm, clear state of being. And remembering in the rhythms of the daily life to return back to this posture of presence, of being earthed, grounded. So that we never move too far away from it. Losing any interest to get caught up in stress, worry, projections, fear, blame, wanting, rejecting. So that wisdom has the opportunity to emerge. Empathy has the opportunity. Seeing clearly. so that we can see and know this state of being, this full posture, whether sitting, standing, reclining or moving. This calm, clear presence offers a receptivity to what is deep. We may or may not be in a period of life of something fresh which is beginning, or needs to begin, needs to start. And to engage in skillful reflection. What supports this initiative, this fresh beginning? Be an area of work or study, spiritual commitment, a new relationship, a creative project. What do we need to be mindful of, aware of? In the starting of something new or relatively recently? Or in the wish to launch something? To really get something underway? To get it going and happening. What supports this? What supports the initiative? the motivation. The spark of interest. The willingness to step into the unknown, to take a risk. What contributes to making something happen? Despite uncertainties, despite insecurity, despite not knowing where it will lead. Yet we still can give birth to something. Start making something happen. The fresh step, the new arising, may take us out of our comfort zone. We need to be clear and acknowledge that. So that we are willing to go from a state of so-called security or relative security to feel some insecurity, it's still enabling a movement to get underway. Sometimes the new step challenges our calm. Our peaceful days and nights. that we have a sense we can develop and grow through the fresh initiative. Through the engagement with the new. It does not have to be a major life-changing event. Small steps have a validity to them. Sometimes the first step is the everlasting step. Sometimes the first step leads towards the last step. We are willing to take the steps. Whether short-lived or everlasting. Having initiated the new, what will support, what will contribute to sustaining that activity? Knowing it is valid, worthwhile. What is the response to fears and doubts which can arise in the starting of something fresh, in taking a step into the unknown? any fears and doubts triggering projections, streams of thinking. Can all of that be seen as something unhelpful? Just an old pattern that's been triggered with no relevance to the dedication, to the commitment, to the exploration of that which is new. So we are freeing up the being, to begin, to start, and to sustain . And we remember we have our moments of stillness, of full presence, of being grounded. To contribute to renewal. To support the vitality and energy for the new and for sustaining that which has value. So we recognize we are human beings, but also and equally humans engaging. So that we know the freedom to be, and equally the freedom to engage. And we stay as steady and true as possible to both. regardless of the fears and doubts of others. Regardless of fears and doubts from our own history. Remaining minute or so. May all beings explore the challenges of life. May all beings experience being engaged with each day. May all beings live with love and liberation. Thank you. So let's have a sip of the water. So, I'd like to speak to you a little bit on the theme. Actually, I've got a piece of the paper and notes here. And then after that, we'll invite your good voices. We can have some exchange together. So, let me just put the specs on. So you would have seen from the message, in fact from Ula sent out, today it's on Wednesday of beginnings and startings, meeting the unknown. Some of the guided meditation reflected that, and then tomorrow it's on mindfulness, both in the formal practices and in the informal, and generating bridges between the two. Friday, with regard to renewal and creativity, and specifically with the role as well. The importance of networking, sharing, community. And then on the Sunday morning, conclusions and some goodbyes. So this evening it's all about hello, and on Sunday it's about goodbye, and we're moving between the two, as we do every day with everything. As the beloved Beatles commented, if you say hello, I'll say goodbye. Have a look at the lyrics, some good non-dual depth in those lyrics. All right, so our days are going by, And in a very simple manner, we can be experiencing from one day to the next. We may find ourselves in a regularity of a rhythm. We're experiencing it working for ourselves. It's healthy, it's skillful, it's creative, it includes service and a caring, thoughtful relationship with others as well as ourselves. All of this manifests and expresses as, shall we say, wise compositions of our life. But we cannot, as we say in English, rest on our laurels. That means we may have a worthwhile, quite satisfying rhythm to our life, acknowledging and appreciating the different forms, different activities, and the kind of structure. You could be a parent, you could be a worker or a student, you could have a variety of significant responsibilities in all manner of ways, and to the best of our capacity we follow through. Even in life, when we are engaged in a thoughtful and caring way, and we have the roles and the understanding to go with it, we still keep the eyes wide open. Just because something is working well for us over a period of time, we still keep our eyes open. That means listen to the deep, in this case. Because it may be that there are other voices inside the being that need to be sparked. That doesn't mean to say that you and I walk out on our life or our roles or our commitments or whatever. It doesn't mean that at all. But what it does mean is that we are listening to the spark, to the singularity of the thought, to the emergence of an intuition, which might be quite subtle, but it's informing us to expand, to take some fresh steps, to learn to look at things in new ways, and cultivate. And so sometimes in our life we have taken important decisions, and no doubt you will remember some in your good life, in which something new happened because of suffering. Because you just knew you didn't want to go on living like this, whatever it might be about. And that voice has called upon you to make a change. That change may have been very fundamental, and you've kind of had a rebirth. You've kind of started a new life. So we recognize we can reach a place or point in our life, and the demand or the challenge is fundamental change, stop the suffering, start again. But what about when it's not like that? What about if our life is pretty good? friendships and relationships are good, one is happy with oneself there, that we can't see anything that's triggering a lot of anguish, trauma, suffering or whatever in the daily life. And life has a good flow and rhythm. And we might ask ourselves, and it's a valid question, why would I want to change something when it's going along well? With the, rather the posh English will say, oh darling, it's going along swimmingly well. So it's going along well in everyday English. But change may come despite that. And sometimes we have the idea for something, but there is some voice in the deep as well which tells us to stay steady with what is. Perfectly valid response. But this evening, in talking with you, I've got in mind the new initiative. So, with the theme for this evening, actually I have a small personal example, and then you'll get the point, maybe. So, some of us, and I'm one of those, in a kind of general overview of the life, a predominant feature in it, for me anyway, has been travel. Since I first hitchhiked around Europe, when I was around 18, maybe 19. And the DNA inside was already well established, mostly from my grandmother, I have to say. She was the influence. And then my mum, and then me. And that led on to more travel, and over the years. And as a small servant of the Dharma, who love travelling, and the opportunity to meet with people, offer programs, courses, retreats, etc. And then, I had wondered to myself, because I hadn't had any experience of this, or I couldn't remember, of being in one place for an extended period of time. So the longest I had been at home was since I got back to England in 1977, was around 12 weeks. And then I'd be off somewhere, wherever. So I wondered whether I was attached to all this lifestyle that's gone on since my teens. But actually, the period at home, which is where I'm talking from now in Devon, I just loved it. Just loved it as the non-travel as much as the travel. And then while having breakfast, forgive me, this is a bit of a long-winded story, while having breakfast in February, the thought arose, in its essence, was, though I love the lifestyle and familiar and comfortable with it, it's time, I was 76 then, 77 now, to take a step more from the known to the unknown. So the outcome of that, some of you will have seen from the last e-news, was to reduce the travel by 60%, and stop the use of the aeroplanes that go with it. And that generates a space So it's a going from the known, which I loved and appreciated, no suffering, at least I can't remember any, into the unknown, but not knowing what might emerge out of it. Not like I had a new vision, a new project, a new direction, something I really, really want to do. None of that was available. But the voice said inside, let go of this, that means 60% of the travel. I worked out the 60% later on, by the way, and see what might emerge out of it. And I use it as a small example of this dynamic that human beings, we find ourselves with, in which the letting go sometimes of some of the known is necessary to find the inner space for something fresh to emerge. And it's really an important clarity and wisdom. And the reason being, you and I, we don't always have the privilege. I had the privilege. I could say yes to further traveling and teaching, as long as people invited me. And I could say no to it. But what about when events of life are not coming out of an emergence of an intuition or a deep thought, but the circumstances around us say no? And we didn't have any choice about it. And we can either live hurt, disappointed, wounded, worried and unhappy, or, and it's not easy, this ends, whatever it might be, your job, it might be a relationship or a marriage, it might be the opportunity to do what you were doing. Now, a friend of mine who is a carpenter, and he loved carpentry. In fact, he's done over the years a lot of work in my home here, bless him. But then the wrists and the muscles in the wrist here, and it got very, very weak. And the sawing of the wood, the carrying of the wood, even the carrying of the backpack became impossible because these tendons here. He didn't ask for that. He's also a musician. It affected his ability to play the flute. So sometimes, as an like that, we have an example. So then, out of that, what's fresh? What's the new opportunity? What can we keep our heart and mind open to? So it's both when we see the initiative, because we have the privilege of the choice, or it comes to us. To give an example, you've been in a relationship, I'm sure you've been in a relationship, and it could be a relationship with a lover, with a good friend, or whoever. And the two of you, very, very, very close, and it sustained itself for days, weeks, months, perhaps years. You've shared a lot together, you've done a lot together, you've perhaps lived together, you've been incredibly close, you've made love together, and all of that. And so the sense of ourself, human enough, has become intimate with the other. And she or he, or they if it's a group, have left with us lots of impressions born out of all of those experiences. But sometimes there is some understanding that's developed, and the mindfulness practice puts plenty of emphasis on this, that which arises stays and passes. Yeah. And what that can mean, if it's kind of understood more deeply, this is how things do change and evolve, is that when one door closes, she or he has gone to live overseas, decided not to be in a relationship anymore, has moved into new circles, or whatever it might be about, that if we've understood, in a way, the temporary nature of relationships, when that relationship, with all the kindness and love and affection, has come to a close, for whatever reasons it might be, if we understood beginning, middle and end, the ending will come, and there can be a recognition, perhaps after some sadness, of course, a human, of the loss or the separation, but a sense that a new door is opening, pregnant with new opportunity, and a space for something else to emerge. So the ending doesn't seem as horrible and terrible and as bad as we thought and imagined, but we've moved, and we've explored beginning, we've explored middles, we've explored endings there, we've got used to these cycles, we have some understanding of it, and someone leaves our life, someone says, we're sorry, we can't employ you anymore, we haven't got the funds anymore, or whatever it might be. And though there's some hurt, yes, some disappointment, yes, some sadness, yes, but there's something else going on, duty understands, something fresh, something new, and the chance for some solitude and aloneness, the chance to really connect with myself, a day which I'll be making all my own decisions. And out of that, we're not afraid of the new, because we understand the evolution of things. Again, let me just have another sip of the water here. I have the joy and delight of mindfulness teacher. And how long is it? My God. Anyway, getting on for about 50 years of, a bit less, 45 years, something like that, anyway, of teaching. So over the years, and some of you may know me for some decades now, but over the years, there has been the regularity of people assisting me on retreats, co-teaching with me, like we say with Ula, and that's gone on regularly over the years. In some of the retreats in the rainforest in Australia, and where we had Dharma gatherings, I might have 8 or 10 people either assisting or co-teaching with me, etc. The point I'm trying to make here is there is a communication and a relationship, and in this case, for something fresh to start, which means a new person, it meant that there was a, shall we call it, an evolution. Someone has to go in order for someone to step in. Otherwise, if I never, otherwise I'd have probably 50 to 100 teachers following me around everywhere because they hadn't gone. So in other words, there's a transition in the relationships, making space for the new to arrive and giving support and being a good friend and giving cultivation there, and person finding their way, and some precious to work with all these people, I have to say, over the years. There. So something, a person goes in order for another to step in. That's how it is. There. And those who have assisted, co-teached, taught with me know this very, very well. So our changes in our life sometimes means when we make decisions, when you and I start something new, it may have some disappointing impact on the other. Others may want us to change our mind. That hasn't been the case with myself and my dear teachers, by the way, there. And to come back to the personal for a moment, it still sticks in my mind. I went travelling to the East as a young guy, when I was 22. And what sticks in my mind was my mother, I say loved a bit, she said to me, "You did your hitchhiking around Europe when you were 19. You're 22. You're too old to go hitchhiking off around the world. This is the time you should be developing your career." Not a chance. So sometimes we need to listen when we start something new. It might be disappointing for the other, because she, he, they mean well for us. But we can't live a life with the constant wish to please. There's an adventure which is going on with life. There's the adventure of the day. We don't have to go hitchhiking to the East for the adventure. Plenty of things where we live which we can explore. So in summary with you this evening, there is the human being with our precious potential to initiate, to create, to make something happen. It doesn't have to be a fundamental, radical change in our life, but it is a receptivity to fresh explorations with the encouragement to keep our heart, mind, voice, and activity open to this. And the energy and vitality of that is really precious, and it can be with us now, teens, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, will be well, 80s, etc. And if we start something, and we wish to sustain it. So there's the beginning, there's the middle, the sustaining. Just to understand, whatever, it may come to an end. It may come to an end because the voice says something new. It may come to an end because it's naturally come to an end. It may come to an end because the world around, circumstances, other people, COVID-19, health and more, stop the continuity. So our relationship is, yes, let's start, yes, let's sustain, and yes, recognize it may change, it may end, or it may be, so to speak, a kind of eternal flow. Let's be deeply interested in all of this. So let's have the quiet minute or two together. May all beings be receptive. May all beings know a rich engagement with life. May all beings be accessible to the fullness of the day. Right. Anyone? I'm going to have a sip of the water. Voila. Any responses? Questions can be in the chat. Got them. Can be your good voice. And I'll have a hit of the water. Doesn't have to be on the theme, by the way. Anything else of interest, like to touch upon, ask? Everything between heaven and earth and more besides.
Christopher, I have a question.
Yes, please do, yes.
I apologize. I feel sometimes I talk too much in these meetings, but I...
you're not the only one. no matter what anybody says, it's like 5% of what Christopher says on the screen. We're talking about talkers. Your chief talker is over here. I do apologize. Anyway, go on.
On the theme, I've always been quite good at starting things.
I missed the word, I'm sorry. Always been, what was the word?
Quite good at starting things.
Oh, quite good at starting. Okay, yes.
Yeah, and since my life has been more connected to the Dharma, my practice has deepened, I've become better at sustaining them.
Good spirit, beautiful.
And my question is, I feel sometimes that there's too much. So the engagement with life is there. Yeah, there's lots of doing.
Yes.
And it's beautiful. Again, recently, the deeper my practice goes, the easier it becomes.
Mm.
So it's, I don't feel that much suffering from it, but I still feel sometimes maybe there is, I don't know, like too much complexity or not enough space
Good point.
Yeah, and it's, I guess I get the sense from the teachings of the Buddha and this topic of simplicity, even this like an aesthetic of simplicity. I have this association of a Dharma teacher or a mindfulness teacher as someone who has some level of simplicity, and I'm curious, what you have to say about this, or like the balance between the engagement.
Let me just ask a little bit. What's the background, if any, to the meaning for you of complexity? So you said, I follow the Dharma, the practices, can initiate things and can sustain them. But then you brought up complexity. What's the complexity about?
Without getting into theoretical discussion.
Theoretical. If you see me yawning, you know it's theoretical.
Right now, I have a full-time job.
Yes.
I teach design. Nice. I teach mindfulness. I'm studying in the MTTC. I'm studying with another Dharma teacher here in Israel. And friends, family, looking for an apartment. You know, life. Many things.
Good spirit. All right.
It's a lot.
Yes. So there can be the engagement. There is the engagement. And the thought can arise a lot. Complexity. So there's diversity, but it sounds like some struggle or balancing it or there. All of this involves memory, specific attention, like right now you and me talking, connection with teaching, design, Dharma teachers, etc. Is there enough opportunity in your life to have a sense of not being engaged? Not being complex, because it's moments, minutes, or longer of non-engagement, and therefore simplicity, and therefore absence of complexity. What's the day feel like? Does the day feel human doing more, and less of the human being? The question.
It comes and goes.
What's the it that comes and goes?
The sense of doing.
All right.
There are days where it's more doing, and sometimes more overwhelming, and there are days where it is very calm.
This is where the mindfulness needs to be rather sharp. Sharp meaning, yes, it comes and goes, but everything comes and goes. In a way, more importantly, when is the time and what are the conditions for some view to arise overwhelming? Too much. So there are some blind spots. This is where the mindfulness has to go. What was going on that I was accumulating? My language of this is breathing in a lot from the outside and forgetting to breathe out. Gets overwhelming. So the thought overwhelming is telling you something about breathing in too much, you know, metaphorically. And really recognizing and appreciating moments, hopefully plenty of them, of not being overwhelmed. And to really live those moments. You don't do anything, and maybe you don't even need any formal meditation posture for any of this. It might do, but it's not essential. But you just feel to be. And you, it's a kind of sensation of the being. It's a vibration of the being. It's a sense of the being there. And the renewal will come. And the grounding into this, when it's really clear, a life of feeling overwhelmed with anything, it ain't going to happen. So it's just, as I say, if you put plenty of interest in the mindfulness here, on these feelings of busy, too much, complexity, overwhelmed, you know, it's all in the same little story of the mind, and recognize when there is not that presentation, it's just not there. Get really familiar when it's just not there, and be mindful to pick up early when it's starting to build. And then you'll be both fine and free. And that's the best. Okay, thank you. Yes, anyone, please.
I just wanted to share something because I asked a similar question to Ulla.
Yes.
A couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, oh yeah, I'm doing so many things and I actually want to like do less. And she asked me, well, why do you want to do less? Like, where does that come from? This maybe simplicity, yeah, or the urge for simplicity.
Yeah.
And she said, trust the feeling when it is too much, of course,
mm-hmm,
but also that can be a way to make myself small and be like, no, I can only do this little thing because I want to be super mindful and I want to be want to live simply. But that can also be a way just to make myself way smaller than I actually am.
Yeah.
And maybe that is the strength and the way some people are, that they do different things and that's their expertise, basically.
Mm.
And yeah, I was very, I thought that was very interesting because I hadn't expected that at all as an answer.
No.
So yeah, I wanted to share here.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Just coming back to the doing less for the moment, which is, you know, can be a really valuable and insightful thought. What, for you, what would it be less of? What would you need to reduce? If you carried the thought, I need to do less. Less of what? That's a question.
Are you asking me or Shlomi?
No, I'm asking you. Asking okay. You. You could always disappear, but I'm asking you.
Well, I thought like different things.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I thought I think I should specialize in one area and not do a lot of areas a little bit.
Okay, let me go. We'll go step by step. Others will know this rather well. The contrast between doing several things and specializing, could you specifically name the specializing interest or the doing different things? Anything stand out for you?
Yeah, it was for me especially a question of my activism.
Yes.
And I did a lot of different things, like last year, for example, from being in the forest and living in the forest to campaigning for elections and everything in between.
Yeah.
So that was a question, like, what do I actually want to do of all these things?
Yes.
Or continue doing.
And what would would that be the specialization, or would that be something else?
Yes, that would be the specialization in that area. Yeah.
You're talking to an activist, so I'm happy to hear what your words are. I'm not going to encourage you to do less, am I? All right. So, do you get renewal? This is a very rather key word, because the activists will not last. They don't last unless there is renewal. Because if you're spending time in the forest, you're spending time organizing, you're spending time on the streets, you're spending time protest, it's a lot of outgoing, powerful and important commitment. So some fresh renewal or energy has to come in. And if you're happy with the other areas of your life, it will be an immense support. But if there's areas problematic or a bit unresolved, whatever it might be about, it's going to impact on your view of activism. So outside of your activism, how's the rest of your life?
Well, that's also all these areas where it also applies to the thing of doing less, just like studying MTTC, activism.
Mm.
So it's also out of the activism, it's a lot.
All right.
But still, I mean, they also renew each other, right? All these different areas.
Mm.
And they nurture me.
Yes.
And so I think that was like the question to see, do I just want to do less, or can I trust when I feel overwhelmed that I'm going to find ways to then, when I actually need it, do less or do other things?
All right. It's a really important question. And for most of us, it's a kind of question which arises quite regularly. There doesn't seem to be, for those engaged with change, social change, to be the single answer to this. So what that means is, there's the, shall we call it, the specialization of being creative with activism in all the different ways. And it's going to be the activists which make a difference to changing this world. Politicians are the last to hear of anything important. Things will start, as they always have done, from the grassroots. That's where revolutions and radical change are started, from the grassroots. It's we who make the changes. And then hopefully it starts to move through this system we live under, this oppressive system. But in order to sustain that right through the years and the decades, the renewal, so when you're not in the activism, the other aspects of your daily life are important. And that, of course, includes the mindfulness. It includes the lifestyle. It includes comfort in being in a relationship and comfort not being in a relationship. All of that sense of the person, the woman, the being, being at home with life is the resource and the support for you to go out on the streets, to go to the forest, to protest against the system and not be afraid of it. So your time when you're not actually active is a precious support for the activism. And it is a genuine ongoing reflection. And just the other day, as an example, it's not my style of activism, but different strokes for different folks. So last year, 7 people poured red paint on the oil of the Shell on the doors of their main head office of the Shell oil company, with its long history of exploitation of resources and villages and blah blah blah. So I think they smashed the windows, did what is called some criminal damage, and poured some red paint on the doors. So they got arrested and they were put on trial. And the judge, I can't remember the exact words, it was only a few days ago, technically said, look, they're guilty, they've done criminal damage. And the plea was, the damage that the Shell oil company, look at the damage that they have done, we're just making a protest. The jury, bless them, found them not guilty. So you just use it sometimes, it doesn't always work like this. We have trust and faith in something, we make our protest there, we may have to carry the consequences. And these 7 people, I noticed, I was pleased, they were all in their 50s. And I thought to myself, just from the way they talk, they are seasoned activists. I had a meeting with some guys who are activists in their 50s and 60s in Totnes. We got together, we kind of called ourselves the elders in the town of the activism. Yeah. But it sustained itself quietly year after year after year after year after year. Somewhere in all of this, these long-term activists have been getting renewal. They didn't burn out. They didn't lose faith. They didn't get full of self-doubt. They just kept the campaigning going. May you, when you reach the white-haired club, still be a dedicated activist, still raising questions. All right, enough? Okay, thank you. Bless you. Nice to hear your voice. Good one. Yes, anyone please. Something getting this inner world, as we just heard, actually from the speakers this evening, a kind of integration of our inner world and our outer. We're not here just to have a calm, quiet, peaceful inner world, precious and beautiful as it is, but we're here in a way to know that and take and make engagements with our outer world. It may just be really giving a lot of love and care to one other human being who really needs our support. We need to find renewal for that, as much as renewal to change the ideologies on this planet. And that regularity of looking at ourselves and picking up the signals as we heard, and they come to us. Busy, overwhelmed, need to do less, take time out, pressure, all of these small things can make it, in the course of time, difficult for us to really engage. So we want to be mindful to pick it up early, move backwards and forwards between the inner and the outer, so that we are respectful to both. I'll just have a look. I think there's a message on the in the chat world here. Ta-da. So a person says, please answer others before me. Very selfless. But a follow-up question. Is there a difference between teaching freedom and action and teaching freedom from suffering? No. Primarily. So you got to, is there a difference between teaching freedom and action and teaching freedom from suffering? So, no. Insofar as we may teach in the formal way. This one right now is in the role of the teacher. And sometimes we're just teaching by what we do. Not a role, but it's a kind of sharing, it's a reminder to us. And the importance of sharing, facilitating, leading, engaging, teaching, is to reduce suffering. The activist, she, he, is engaged in that to reduce suffering. Suffering of the human kingdom, suffering of the creature kingdom, and suffering of in the habitats, in the environmental kingdom. And therefore, action and freedom from suffering work together. And what we need to remember, our personal suffering, for those who have personal suffering, isn't helpful. So any exploration towards the end of suffering, whether one is a counsellor, social worker, looking after kids, working in a hospital, teaching the Dharma, mindfulness classes that support people or whatever, as well as the large issues, I cannot see any point in suffering over it. Suffering over the planet, suffering over creatures, suffering over what's going on in the world. I can't see any point in it. Because if we wish to change things, it makes it harder in communicating about ending of suffering if we are suffering a lot over it. It's a circular problem. So it might be, you know, I just watched the news actually yesterday evening for about 10 minutes. I tend to be very conservative in the amount of time I give to watching the news. 10 minutes and then switch off the radio or switch off the TV or whatever. So the news, the primary news, was the situation in India. You know, I have a love of India for all of its complexity and everything else with it. And having spent 10% of my life in India, that means more than 7 years out of 70 plus years. So a kind of familiarity. So to see what was going on and the tragedy and the incredible bravery of the doctors and the nurses. When one journalist says she witnessed in one small ground of cremation, 200 cremations in one small area in a day. It's just hard to imagine what the death toll must be. And so sometimes we witness that. We feel sad. We feel a closeness there. But to begin suffering over it gets so disheartening, it takes away the energy. It takes away our capacity to respond. We feel low, we'll start to feel depressed or whatever. So we are clear, we look at situations, we are empathetic, we do feel sadness, we recognize it's a tragedy, but not giving it such authority that we feel so disheartened it paralyzes us. And we've got to know the difference. We've got to know the difference. We who are servants of others, in a way, need to be as clear as we possibly can, so that the issues of the world don't overwhelm us, so we can keep the vibrancy alive. It's an undertaking. It's a challenge for all of us. And some of you are working in really precious and important fields. You're hearing and seeing and witnessing a lot day by day. You are, as I said with the metaphor, breathing in a lot. Do remember time outside so you can breathe out. And get that rhythm between the other and oneself in a good flow. This way we can really be a real good support for people, and there is no chance of getting burnt out. No chance whatsoever if we've got this balance right of the inner and the outer. Yes, anyone, please. A couple more questions and then we'll call it a day. Another sip of the water.
I would have another question.
Yeah, please do.
But it doesn't really relate to the questions before. So I was wondering, when you were talking about those beginnings and having a fresh view and starting anew and all that.
Yes.
And I think somehow observing myself, I sometimes find myself not sticking to the old, but when I'm in something that is settled and, okay, I should start anew, I should find something fresh. But sometimes this also doesn't help to arrive and to stay with what actually feels good also. So maybe it's almost like an addiction or a pattern to start anew
good point.
All the time.
Very good. Yeah. It's a good, really valid point there. That's why I'm kind of enthusiastic and keen about what emerges from the deep. So pretty well, when the I should arises, I should start something new, I should do something new, it's usually it could be a bit of pressure. It could be some stress, it could be some boredom, it could be just an addiction, as you say, to thinking that way. So if it starts with the I should, let it go. Just, oh gosh, that old pattern's back. I should. And even though it might seem quite a nice idea at the time, but usually it doesn't have the authority that something deep does. And our interest is in that, where it's not really a matter of choice, meaning I might do this, I might do that, but there's a knowing it's the right thing to do. It's got some authority, it's got some power to it. I should... It's a habit. Getting to know the difference between the two. And I, just a little bit there as well. Some people think I'm thinking of some life, dramatic, life-changing event. But actually, I don't have that so much in mind. I'm actually talking about the everyday. It's just the everyday, and following through the small things of life. And if there is going to be, there may be a major change, you're taking the steps of the small things will be the very best preparation for the big ones. And the world of I should is minimal, and the world of intuition to action is more pronounced. It's all the difference in the world. Any response? No.
You mean me or anything?
Yes. I am the one on the. That's why I unpin. So that's the one on the screen.
I think the small steps are maybe a good thing to observe for me.
Yes.
Because I tend to also to doubt the big ones and to, let's say, I've started my work a year and a half ago, and then the thought arises, okay, should I start something new, for example?
Yes.
And so I don't know, it's not I should, but it comes from some different circumstances or from sometimes a wish to leave everything behind somehow, yeah. But this is not, maybe you said it to look for that what comes from the deep.
Yes,
and recognize it, and
yes.
Then take the courage to take the step.
Exactly. Exactly, because quite often it's the small things. It could just be some tiredness at work. It could be the thought, "Oh, a lot to do." It could be a difficult person in the office. It doesn't take much, but it has some impact. And then the thought can arise, oh, maybe I should try something else. There, it might just be, as you pointed out earlier, just it's a thought which has arisen and fairly regularly in any area of life which is important to you. And one just gets this thought arising, I should, whatever it might be about. So, you know, are you busy? Is it doing too much? Is it just a habit? Is it a bit of pressure? Whatever. Just noticing what might be supporting and feeding into that one there. And because no matter what you did, even if you made a change, it would still follow you around. It has to. It's a habit. You could be in paradise, it would still follow you around. So it's catching it early when it does arise. I should. And say, okay, that's the old habit. Let me just listen more, a little bit more deeply. And that has a bit more vitality and authority to it. All right, there's a message up on the screen here. I'm just you know, read the message. I've got this little light to keep it, all right. This is for everyone. It makes total sense to me, the fact that suffering in itself is not helpful. Exclamation mark. However, the question comes up for me in how far suffering is valuable as the starting point of transformation, as you mentioned in the beginning. Could it not be said to be helpful in that way? Understanding. Would awakening and action be difficult if we had never experienced such transformation of suffering? Somehow I am missing something here. It's a good point. There's a tendency, an understandable one, and sometimes we say, probably most of us at some point, I was in this situation and I was suffering so much over it. This suffering got me to make a change, so therefore it was useful. Therefore, we need suffering because it helps us to make a change in our life. And lots of people would agree with that, but not Christopher. So we might think, the suffering is the cause for me to make a change. Really, if that was the case, I think the suffering in this world would have long finished. Because I suffer, so the more I suffer, the bigger the change, and I get out of my suffering. But we don't live in a world like that. We live in a world where there's a heck of a lot of suffering. And there aren't the resources within or between people, no matter how big the suffering is, to get out of it. So suffering can't be a cause for the end of suffering, because if it was, given all of this suffering, if it had been a cause for its end, it would have ended. We're on a roller coaster of uncertainty in this world. So we might ask, yes, there is suffering. Let me not draw the conclusion the suffering, because of suffering, I got out of suffering. But let me ask, yes, there is suffering. What got me out of it? That's more the question. What is it in the human being deep? It is so deep, this is important to remember, it's deeper than the suffering. We may say, oh gosh, incredibly deep suffering. For all the circumstances, really deep, it's really deep. I listen to it enough, you do too. But it's not as deep as the ending of it. It's not as deep as freedom from suffering. It's not as deep as the response to change it. That's deep. What's that about? What is it about a human being going through a lot of suffering, about lots of issues, or one particular? And somehow or other, something else brings about the transformation that this good person writes about here. So, I would say, let's have a perspective on the suffering. Let's not engage in any denial. But let's not give it too much authority. Let's not make it a cause for the end of suffering because there's no evidence. And I have noticed, actually, a couple, how long ago? 30 years ago, I wrote I put two books together of people who I love. Very, very nice privilege and joy. And activists, nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize, on the international board of the Buddhist Peace Fellowship, had engaged in courageous actions, had to address lots of suffering, human suffering, from the hospice to protests about war, imprisonment, and much, much more. So I put together maybe about, I can't remember how many people I interviewed, 20 to 30 perhaps, and people who are just living really deep and precious lives. I can put hand on heart with these people, some of whom are kind of gods in my life. One of the things which really stood out with them was they were extraordinarily happy. So you think, my gosh, these people have been in prison, they've been tortured, they've done these remarkable events with their life, they've faced human suffering in a variety of ways. There, they've lived with uncertainty and much, much more. And one would say, gosh, you would think with all of that weighing down, they'd feel a lot of unhappiness and despair and suffering, but they were unusually happy. The happiness and the determination and the courage and the conviction and the values mattered more, had a strength to it, that the suffering which they attended to couldn't touch. That is impressive. And sometimes you and I, we got the privilege of meeting such people. And my view about this is, if you can, hang out with her or him as long as you can. Maybe some of their vibes, I'm being a bit spiritually esoteric here, but maybe some of their vibes might rub off onto us. Of people who have a quiet presence, dignity, integrity, happiness about them, and are just not afraid of this world. That's terrific. I mean, they're everywhere. One can find them. They are what I call the gods and goddesses of the earth. So we'll take suffering seriously, but we won't suffer over suffering. We will not suffer over suffering. It's not helpful. Yes. I think we're done for today, are we? Actually, I'm hungry. Not suffering over it, but I'm hungry. All right. So thank you very, very much for your precious and beautiful contributions this evening. Also for your listening. And as you know, and it's been said a few times over the year, that sometimes a single point, and we don't know which one in our innocence, resonates well with us, and it just goes deep, and it stays with us. Now, to me, that's really, really precious. Like somebody mentioned to me in a Zoom group before this one, that years ago, in a kind of, what should we call it, typical Christopher, I may say, one-liner, I said, one of the most important movements in our life is the journey or the movement of the food or drink to this little hole. kind of a one-liner. One of the most important movements of life. Our happiness and our health depends on what takes place between that food and drink and it being put in here. And the person said to me on a Zoom meeting, I remember you saying this years ago. I've never forgotten. It's really been important to me in my relationship to diet. Sometimes a one-liner is said. Your mindfulness teaches you just say something a little bit different and it just registers. And the person feels the value of it years later. That's what mindfulness teachers do. That's our job. All right, enough. Let's have the quiet minute together. May all beings explore the inner and the outer. May all beings know the freedom to respond. May all beings pick up the signals that might require our attention so that we can abide with wisdom. All right.